All right, let's go ahead and get started about what we're here for tonight. Let's talk about the commodities. As we always do, we'll begin with opening comments from our panel of experts. To my immediate right is a man that you are probably very well familiar with. He is Bill Biederman of Allendale. Bill, it's a pleasure that you're with us tonight, and I know you want to talk about the Allendale meeting coming January, so go ahead and mention that at the top here and then give us your opening comments.
Well, thanks. I will take advantage of that opportunity. So we do have a big annual conference, January 20th and 21st. We go down to the Board of Trade, have a mock trading session. We'll have about 200 people staying in the pit of the beans. It's great. And then all day on Saturday, the 21st, it's in the conference, much bigger than this, about 300 people there, and it'll be a good deal. And if you fill out that card, we're going to give you, first time ever we're doing this, by the way, we just rolled out our new website. Whether you have DTN or internet, we'll give you, till the end of the year, absolutely free if you fill out that card that we handed out. And on our website, you'll see information about that conference. Well, on to the comments about the markets. Don't need to tell you all this, because you probably already know it. Production's the second largest in beans ever recorded. Total supply is the greatest ever recorded. And stocks at 350 are rather large. World stocks are a record. And in fact, South America has 1.1 billion bushels of ending stocks left over from last year. We have 350 million. They have 1.1 billion bushels. So there's a lot of beans out there. And I'm going to just read to you the other years where we had large supplies, where the market bottomed. 501, 512, 526, 507, 467, and 512. We're currently at 570. So we have a ways to go based on that information before the low is in. So I think there's a great opportunity for you in beans. You can sell beans, sell them for January delivery. That gives you some time to let the market go down and maybe pick up an LDP payment before you have to deliver. And it would work out to be a pretty good deal, and you'd still be able to turn a profit per acre and go to the bank with that kind of receipt. Corn, you can't do that, can you? You can't sell corn today and turn a profit and show the bank. So if you got a lot of corn that you haven't sold, we're saying hold corn, sell beans on rallies.
Thank you very much, Bill. Next to Bill is a man that calls New Market, Indiana home, and his name is Wayne Nelson. Wayne is one of our very best regular contributors on AM 580. He is on the air every Tuesday morning at 9:50 in the morning and again at 2:06 in the afternoon. As you are probably well aware of, Wayne, of course, also one of the very first pioneers, as it were, in AM 580 radio. So, Wayne, with that in mind, an opening comment to you, sir.
Well, good evening. Good evening. It's a great pleasure to be here again this evening. We're glad to see the snow hasn't started yet like last year, and we hope to get home before it gets as bad as last year. But we were glad to come back, and we're glad to see all of you out here. You guys did a great job of helping rally the markets last year with the bad weather that you had, and I'm sure that a lot of your yields suffered because of it. It was because of the Northern Illinois drought and a lot of the dry areas, so we were able to see a rally last year in this corn and bean market. And go on. Unfortunately, those guys in Iowa and Southern Illinois and Indiana and Minnesota produce too much corn, and we've got a real stockpile of corn out there. Our stocks are so big, looks like it's going to be at least till May before we see much of a chance, or the May contract, before we see much of a chance of a bounce back in the corn. So it looks like we're going to stay in a carry market with the corn. Not much happening until we can look towards next year. As crop and looking at what we're planting. As Bill was saying about the beans, unfortunately, the American farmer done too good a job producing beans also, and so did the South American farmer. We are looking at least the estimate of South of Brazil being only 54 million metric tons to start out rather than the 59 million metric tons we started with last year. But unfortunately, Argentina's up from like their 38 to 39 to 42, and Argentina seems to be picking up. The weather seems to be very favorable in every place except southern Argentina. It's not bad there yet, but it is on the dry side. So we're going to agree with Bill that probably the beans aren't going to see a rally. Are they going to see the sell-off? We're not sure. But we feel the farmer's going to hold very tight because of the last 2 years, from the January lows, we've seen a $2.50 raise in the bean price. And we feel that the majority of the farmers, like yourselves out there, are saying, you know, I sold early when they told me there wasn't any hope the last 2 years, and here again we come in and we could have picked up a couple of dollars if we'd hung on. Will that happen again? Not without some weather problems and whatever, because we're looking for a change in corn acres to be down 1 to 2 million acres. But unfortunately, part of that's going to be filled with wheat, but we look for some bean acreage increases, and that doesn't help the carryout for next year, and we've already got a big carryout. So that's just what we're looking at to begin with. Those aren't a lot of happy things to talk about, but I think that you know, we do have some opportunities, and we'll talk more about some options and things we're going to look at a little later.
Thank you very much, Wayne, for that. And next to Wayne is Pete Manhart, and he is the president of Bates Commodities, and he has been in that position for a number of years now. And Pete, of course, also on the air on AM 580 radio every Tuesday morning at 8:50 for our pre-opening commodity market report. So he kind of tells us what's going to happen before the opening bell. Pete, an opening comment, please, sir.
I'm happy to be here in DeKalb County. I grew up in southern Shelby County, but I have distant relatives that grew up in the or farmed in the and still do in the Paw Waterman area. But I haven't seen him probably since the late 50s, early 60s. But it's good to get back into this, one of the richest districts of the area of farm ground. I gave out some blue and yellow sheets. That's got a history of where we're at, which these guys talked about for the U.S. as far as corn and beans. You can look at it at your leisure later. But as Bill also talked about, we have a world record carry out in beans also. And the corn, the U.S. has got most of the carry of the world. The rest of the world is, we've got a lot of carry, but U.S. has got most of the corn carry. We do need good usage in world supply. One of the things that's hurting us right now, you've all heard about, is the dreaded bird flu. But we might be turning the corner there because the Chinese are in a, putting those shots in. Supposedly going to get 100% of them covered. They supposedly are at the 80% mark. And once we get that turned and don't hear as much, we might see better usage. But I think we're going to take a little bit longer to grind through the stuff we've got. We would be looking at selling anything on rallies and selling carry. If you can get 30 cents further out and carry it, be looking to do that on both corn and beans for down the road. We would also be looking, even though you haven't got 205 done yet, if we have some bounces in the 206 grain prices, looking at locking up some sales at 206.
Thank you very much, Pete. We're going to get into the specifics of some of these markets here in just a second, but as I was driving up here and talking to Pete, I was reflecting on some things, and some of them were around some of the common types of things that people who market do or don't do in order to be a successful marketer. And I'd like to spend a couple of minutes with our analysts just getting from them, because they've done it so long with so many people, what are some of the most successful things that good marketers do, and what are some of the things that inhibit good marketing strategies from producers? And Pete, I'll start down at your end and work back this way.
Well, one of the best things that people can do is take a sheet of paper, scratch out estimated bushels, and start putting some places in to sell them at your local elevator for cash. Or if you use the markets where you're going to protect them at. In the past, every year we've seen, and we haven't yet this year, but we've seen corn go to 270. When it goes past 250, you ought to have marketed some somewhere, either at the elevator or through puts or calls or futures. When it goes to 270, you better market some more. If it goes over 3, you better market a whole bunch more. On beans, when it gets over 6, you better market some. When it gets over 7, market a bunch more. If it goes over 8, I'd sell out because you can always get in on the board. Having just a simple plan of when it gets here, I'm going to sell 10%. When it gets here, I'm going to sell another 10 or 20 or 30, whatever your increment is. As it goes up, works a lot better than trying to hit the high And after it started back down, then you're afraid to sell it, and you end up selling it on the low. So as the market goes up during the year, no matter what time of year it is, sell some of either the cash you got or next year's grain.
So Pete, a proponent of scale-up selling. Wayne?
Well, Pete's hit on many, many good things there, and I think one of the things we have to look at is you have to, if you're going to be a user of options, you have to buy them when you don't want them. And I say that, and that sounds really silly, but as now as we are very depressed, nobody up here told you, wow, we're going to see a big rally, did they? It's probably time to look at buying some calls because the volatility is very cheap. When the last year, when the volatility was high and the Brazil drought was going on, the price of calls and puts was outlandish. To use these effectively, we believe, and we call them courage calls at times, we buy some calls or puts that gives us the courage to go ahead and make the cash sales down when we do get that little pop in the market, either up or down or however we want to look at how we're playing things. And I think we have to look ahead and position ourselves into something that's going, that will help us to be able to make a decision or pull the trigger. If we have calls in place and we do see a drought like you guys saw last year, I'm sure that a lot of you wish you'd sold a little more than you did of your corn crop, even as small as it was. And if you'd had some calls in place from earlier in the season, you could have done that and wouldn't have felt so bad about it. I think that if you're going to take the CRC or RA insurance that does guarantee so many bushels and whatever, if you're going to pay the premium for that type of insurance, you need to go ahead and market some bushels along with it when you're in the profitable situation and not be quite so worried about whether you hit the top of the market or not like that. I think that's another thing is to shoot for is not the top of the market, but in the top third of the market and become more comfortable doing that. And I think all those things along with it. I think then also is reacting to weather at the time and whether you need to, if you really feel it's sincere or whatever, that you need to be able to step in and say, I will buy something back, I will get out of something, or I will buy a call or put as to help my position to stay long to what I to my long-term goal. And I think those are just some of the things that you have to look at as the time goes on.
Bill.
Well, we've been doing this for, Allendale's been around for 22 years, and prior to that, 5.5 years down in Chicago, and really seen a lot of people do a lot of different things. And what we've really found is that the group of people we're working with, they seem to do two things. Number one, they're viewing their marketing differently than they did when I started in the industry. When they started, it was always, I need to get in the top half of the market, or I want you to sell me the high. Yeah, right. Now it's more like, you know, I need this many dollars per acre. So let's come up with a plan where we can have a net gross revenue after all your expenses and stuff like that. I want to know that I can make this many dollars per acre. And we can manage that. So that's what we do. We come up with a plan that can achieve that, and then we have a plan intact using some options as well as other marketing tools so that we can stick with that once we put it on. And that's really the key. Achieve the dollar per acre number that we need and get it into a position that we can stick with. And I'll tell you what, it's been a life-changing experience in my career. We've seen tremendous results from that. And then we split the marketing up into two different functions. It's rather just than getting a price, we're, in order to get that dollar per acre deal, we're looking at a flat pricing situation to establish the level that we have to sell at in order to generate those dollars. And then we're also looking at earning storage returns. Once that price has been established, they mentioned carry in the market. We look at that. We look at basis and stuff like that. So it's a two-step process. It's flat pricing and then merchandising.
All right. Tonight we're actually going to start with not corn, not soybeans, but wheat.
Great.
We're going to start with wheat tonight, and we're going to go to Bill first with the first question. And we look at the wheat prices today, December wheat, 304 up 3.5, March 320 and 3/4 up 4, the May 329.5 up 4, July 338 and 3/4 up 4.25, and then September out to 346.5 up 3.5. The December wheat contract came 0.5 cent of its contract low today at 299.5 for the low. However, you got to begin to look at this wheat contract. There is a huge short position in wheat. It's like 50,000 contracts or more, depending on who you ask and who you talk to. And the question becomes, why is it that funds are being so, and non-commercials hitting this wheat so hard, particularly the Chicago wheat, in the last couple of months? Are they using it as a short hedge against a rising U.S. dollar, for example? And if that is the case, and we keep an eye on the dollar, if the dollar breaks, what are the implications for wheat? And is there potential premium that can be gained in that wheat then that translates finally back into the corn market?
Wow, that was a lot. I don't think I can remember all that, Dave. But I can tell you that the dollar is a factor. We've firmed the dollar up, but it's really not to any extreme level yet. It could get all the way up to 102 before it gets to a normal equilibrium to world stuff that you look back over history. So that's a factor, but it's not an outrageous pendulum swing at this point. I think the traders, really, their focus right now is on the fact that there's a lot of wheat. There's a lot of competition out there, and right now we are having a difficult time competing on the world market. I mean, today was our first big wheat sale, and we sold 200,000 wheat today, and other than that, it's just been like pulling teeth. So the bottom line is the funds are massively short. It's a record. I think it's really close to a record short position. It's right on our website. You can look it up. It's a graph. And if they decide to short cover, you could probably see a 30-cent swing up in the wheat. But that's going to be met with a lot of selling because of the world competition, and the trend is down. So a lot of supply.
Wayne, is that the kind of information that you would agree with? And I throw in this little tidbit. The world stocks to use ratio are still near 20-year lows. And depending on which analyst you talk to, you get around 23% of those or thereabouts based on their particular analysis.
Wheat's harvested every month of the year somewhere in the world. The world wants our hard wheat a lot more than wants our soft red wheat. The world stocks of soft red wheat are a lot larger. A lot of our short position come out of spreads of buying Minneapolis and Kansas City and selling Chicago. They have liquidated some of the Kansas City positions. Basically, we planted more wheat. Our wheat conditions report has come in not as good over the last, but I know that there was more soft red wheat planted. In our area, there was more wheat planted than planted in the last 10 years. So there is quite an overabundance and not a market. I think Bill alluded to that we're having a lot of trouble getting into the export market in wheat. Canada, Australia, a lot of them like that are picking on that one along the way. So that, along with the funds wanting to be short, and anytime you want to get long, they clobber you. And number two, as for us sitting here, does anybody have over 200 acres of wheat sitting in the audience? Doesn't look like we've got a lot of hedging to do either. So, but those are the things I think that affect it more than anything.
And Pete, give us your wheat take.
Well, I think one thing, reasons wheat's important is because it's a direct competitor for corn for food. So if we have cheap wheat, it's going to keep pressure on corn from going up. If you look at wheat also from where it used to be to where it is, Russia, Ukraine export more wheat than we do. Years ago, we were one of the major exporters. We're not anymore. We're third or fourth choice after Canada, Australia, the Ukraine, Europe. They export. Ukraine by itself exported, I believe, last year one more wheat than we did. If it wasn't last year, it was the year before. So we're not a major exporter there. It does compete with our corn for feed use.
All right, then. Let's go ahead and talk about soybeans for a bit then. We heard avian flu. we heard bad lagging export sales. I think they're down 35% from a year ago at this time. Commitments down 29% from a year ago at this time. Year-to-date outstanding sales down 29%. Year-to-date commitments 16% lower. Last week, a marketing year low on decreases 157,000 tons from unknown destinations. Given all of that, given where we are, and we did see a little bounce in the market today, but is it more than turnaround Tuesday? And are we looking at those downside objectives that you talked about, Bill, in your opening comment, including 523, which is a logical place to go on the current charts?
Well, I think we're definitely headed lower. I think the trend is down for all the reasons that I said economically. It's down. All of our models tell us that the market value is at a lower level. And all the buyers know that. You know, what did all the buyers do with corn in the country? They all lowered the basis to 50 under and bought the corn for $1.40, $1.50, and they're sitting on it. I had a customer yesterday that oversold some corn contracts, delivered them the day before, and then had to turn around and buy back corn from the elevator. 35-cent difference between his offer price and his selling price. So, you know, they don't have any interest in selling corn because they bought it so cheap. That's not how they feel about beans. They don't want to buy a lot of beans up here. They're buying what they need to move out to fill their contracts. They want to wait until it's cheap. So the buyer has got this mentality that I'm not going to pay up for these beans just yet. Now, basis has firmed up because of freight issues and things like that. But they're not owning and holding like they are this corn. The ownership of beans is on the farm. That's what's scary. And so I think, number one, from a speculative standpoint, the trend is down. The funds went from a long position to a short position last week. And yeah, we had a little bit of a turnaround today, and I hope that we rally back. We closed it right around 560, or we're trading 560 tonight. Or is it 570? 570, I guess it is.
560 on 558 Jan.
Okay, 560 is where we're at here tonight. I'm hoping we get up to that 570 to 585 range, and I'll put my full position back on. But just to let you know, I've been short for a long, long time, and I got out day before yesterday. So, I'm, you know, seasonally we go sideways for about 4 weeks right now.
All right, thank you much, Bill. And Wayne, what is your bean strategies and analysis at this point?
Well, we reduced the usage of beans for crushing by about 1.1 million bushels for the amount of chickens we've killed in China right now. That's why part of it, they're going to have to take, they'll take a million less bushels of beans just for what they've killed off. A broiler eats 2.7 pounds a meal to produce a broiler. In essence, if we could change them over to pork, we'd be a lot better. They eat 100 pounds meal to and 670 pounds of corn to get a hog ready. Of course, there's quite a bit more meat to a hog than there's a chicken that way. But it still takes a lot that way. Beans, basis has improved greatly. You farmers are very tight holders. The processors are not buying beans. We heard a month and a half ago when oil took off that, by God, we want to buy this oil. We want to make soy diesel. Then we hear we're producing a half a pound more of oil per bushel this year, about a record high, and doing it. And energy backed off just a little bit, and all of a sudden, none of these people that thought British Petroleum, everybody that wanted the bean oil, seemed to have backed away from it immensely. I can't think that unless things are really falling apart, we still wouldn't want to use bean oil for soy diesel and use a lot more of it. The crush margins are positive now. The crushers are wanting to crush. They want to keep going strong. As Bill said, they might not want to accumulate, but they want to keep crushing at full capacity. China went from being a negative, it was negative crush margins over there a week ago. They're back into the positive crush margins as of this week. That's why we've heard that they've accumulated somewhere between 3 and 6 cargoes of beans from us this week because their crush margins back onto being positive. As I said, over the last 2 years, we didn't see a good reason, but beans rallied $2.50. Coming into the summer, We are talking La Nina. If you look at most any of your long-term climatologists, Elwin Taylor, a couple, three others are talking about that. There is that possibility that we can handle and do this. Am I wildly bullish beans? No, but I think you as a farmer are. And I think the farmer is going to hang on to them and hang on pretty tight to beans. And I don't think they're going to really be big sellers. Generally, that doesn't work well when everybody does it like that. But it is helping the basis tremendously right now. And, you know, there's not the carry like there is in corn, but the basis is very tight and come in very strong.
You mentioned the basis, Wayne. And Pete, about that basis, it's widened out pretty dramatically since September. Do you reward this market before the end of the year with some sales?
Well, if we look at the last maybe month, we've been up over 6, what, once, and near 6 another time. We went right down to 53 the first time. A couple days ago, we went down to 45. It wouldn't surprise me if we bounce a little. I don't know if we can get back to 6, but I'd sure be a willing seller at that 70 to 85 if it gets there. And then if we go to that 525 area, which is supposedly the next place we'll go to, maybe replace some there with calls. But if we bounce at all, I would be a willing seller of beans right in this time frame. And usually this is a time of year from now to mid-December, right before Christmas, that we do bounce some. But our total usage and our total supply, we've got more supply than we need. So there's really no reason for these bounces except for, one, very tight holding, which is happening, and two, the freight is so much lower now than it was a month ago. That's one reason the basis is so much. So we're going to see wide basis variabilities depending on where you're at and who needs it. So in your area, you might have, I had a guy today that was offered 8 over on corn, not on beans, because they needed it right there at his area. Be ready for those things in your area to unload beans or whatever if they have really nice basis for you.
2006 crop bean recommendations, Bill. You know that we have a huge stockpile of beans compared with a year ago, 3 times as many beans roughly as compared to a year ago. Fear of Asian soybean rust in the U.S. crop probably going to be much more muted this next growing season, with Chicago saying, show me the rust, before taking a proactive stance on it. Growing conditions down in South America, pretty good thus far, at least through this week, 12% of the crop vegetative stage. Do you want to begin to make those sales, given those bearish fundamentals? And if so, do you want to have those sales, some of those sales made by, January 1st?
Well, I think a lot of folks that we work with have already sold. I mean, we were sitting at $6 to $6.12 for a long time in that '06 bean contract. So a lot of folks we work with, they're sold. I'd tell them 50% and they'd sell 20. But, you know, bottom line is we got some sold. If you haven't done anything, you know, I would put on kind of a little box strategy. I did this for a client in Central Illinois this week. We bought some puts and sold some calls about, I think they're about a dollar higher. And so basically we're protected from pretty close to the market if it goes down. If it goes up, we're really not committed to the market till it gets about close to a dollar higher. And I think it only cost us like 9 cents to put it on. It wasn't very expensive. So, you know, maybe do something like that to get some management in. Bottom line is this. If you were to go to the bank today and say, I need to borrow, you know, $5 gazillion to plant my crop, and you put down your net worth statement, what are you going to put down for the bean price? Because the way it looks, it's going to be down at $5. So if you can have something in there that's in the 570, 580 mark, that's going to really show good on the paper. And, you know, the upside's still open. So that's what I would do. I would manage it.
So something like perhaps, buying a $7 NOV call and selling an $8 NOV call for this kind of a vertical stretch, that kind of a plan?
Well, you could do that. What we did in this particular case is we bought a near-the-money put, you know, and so that if it goes down, that put kicks in and we're protected. But if it goes up, we're free and clear. We still own the market. But see, those puts are expensive. They're like, 40-some cents.
So you could go to an out-of-the-money call and sell that and pick up maybe 30 cents. That brings your cost down to about a dime or something like that. A guy can live with that. And, you know, if the beans rally a dollar, hey, we'll be happy to sell them some up there. So it's kind of like a box strategy. You know, if it goes up, you're not committed until it gets to a dollar higher. If it goes down, though, you got a safety net built in. Something like that. If you haven't done anything yet, something like that might make some sense.
I'm going to go ahead and look at some of these prices if I can find my price sheet here on the beans, and here they are. January beans today, $5.58 up 4. Take it out the July, $5.76.5 up 3.5. The red line Noves, $5.86.5, and they are up 4 today. What is the potential, Wayne, for those red line beans to rally? And at what point would you be willing to make a cash or hedge to arrive sale?
We're along the lines of thinking that Bill is. We've sold anywhere from 20 to 40% of our new crop beans. I wasn't quite as good as Bill. He got his done for 9 cents. We bought a $6 put and sold 2 $7 calls for 10 cents. To box, just like he said. I don't know if that's the numbers that he was using. That's the numbers that my customers used, and that's what they put on. Feeling that we just didn't like the way the acreage increase was looking and what was doing. We could not talk anybody into selling beans before they broke under $6. In years past, we'd like to sell 6.25, figuring that'd give us $6 cash beans for our first sale. I can admit I wasn't a very good salesman because I didn't get any of my customers to do it up there. It took when they got down near 6 and they felt they were going down more before I could get them to do anything. So I think anywhere over 6 to 6.10 is probably a reasonable place to think that it possibly could get back to, but I definitely want to be putting some either some box options like we put on there or just some straight sales to either cash or futures.
Pete, your soybean strategy?
Sell bounces on old crop, sell bounces on new crop, on bounces, buy puts and put on boxes, but be ready to sell on anything, because if we grow 2 to 3 million more acres and South America grows what they're going to grow, this 5.10, 5.20, we're going to be at that thing looking at, why didn't we sell some there at that meeting at 5.90 or 5.80? Just like right now, corn, why didn't we sell corn back there when it was 245 and 238, and now it's 186. We've got lots of stocks out there. The box things are good ideas to protect low. If you want to do cash or the other, I mean, there's opportunities out there on bounces. I'd be selling.
And we'll stay with you, Pete, and look at the corn a bit more. December futures, as you already spoke of today, 187.5. Any reason not to believe that December futures will move to their 1999 expiration low, 184? And if so, what do you do?
Well, hopefully I have all my corn sold already, but most people don't. Most people, because of the weather in Illinois, didn't sell near as much as they normally do, so we've got more corn sitting around. I think one of the things we've got to realize on corn is all these piles out there, part of it is an illusion. Part of it was a lot of elevators thought we were going to have bad crops, so they kept a lot more than normal. And by the time they found out we had a good crop, they couldn't get it shipped because of either the high shipping costs or because of the hurricanes and the mess to ship it. Those piles are now disappearing in places they're already gone, so I think that'll help. But we do have a huge amount, 2.3 billion carryout. But if you look at usage, it's also huge. We think we're going to have smaller acres. Right now, I'm not going to sell any cash at these prices. I'm going to hang on. But if you do need to sell, sell out that carry. Sell out May, July, somewhere where you get carry. We still think that, you know, that carry is worth taking control of. In the past several years, I think we've only in the last 30, we've had one year where corn on the board didn't get to 270. Maybe this will be another one of those years. But if we get the board back anywhere up for next year, higher, we need to be selling it for 206. And the old crop corn, I don't know what we're going to do with it right now. I'm going to hang on to it waiting and with a hope to sell it at a higher price.
Wayne, basis is improved in corn for January through March delivery in a lot of areas around the country. And I'm wondering if this is the time to consider to lock in basis in case the futures bottoms or rallies or farmers selling of cash for cash flow needs show up, which is often the case toward the end of the year.
Well, I think that goes on when you're wanting to ship the corn and what you're wanting to do, Dave. If you're feeling that you need to ship some corn within the next 2 months or 2.5 months, the basis is narrowed in nicely, and there will be more actual corn move after the first of the year. There always is. Two reasons. Number one, we've got a lot of piles left. I think, you know, as we go down in Parr, Illinois, one of the guys down there, I think they had, they've got 4 million bushel on the ground in one place where they generally don't put any out. You know, in our area, I know our old elevator that we sold to Peavey has got a little 3.5 million on the ground. One of my farmer customers has got 1.2 million on the ground. They're going to want to be picking that up, and they'd already sold it or whatever, and it's going to be moving in the January to February time frame. And because it's going to be moving then, the elevators are going to be getting the stuff is going to be moving, so they aren't going to pay up at all the different places. It's going to be available and moving. So I would, yes, if I'm wanting to move it in that time frame, I'm going to say lock in your basis for that time period. If you think there can be some sort of pop or whatever, fine or dandy. If you don't, if you want to, need to move it for cash flow or to core the bin or do something, let's look at the July calls. We're talking out to where we can have some weather problems. We're talking about the La Nina could be in effect. We're talking about not as many acres being planted. We're talking about the possibility of a little rally. Why not go into the market and buy a 210 July call? We're trading somewhere around 220 right now. That's 16.5 cents. You say, God, that's too much. I don't want to mess with that. But we can just go out to a 240, which is 30 cents out from there, and we can sell that for 6.75 cents. We can make that a dime call is what we'd have in it. We can only go up 30 cents, but we can still have a good chance, and that's 10 cents in the money. So when we're taking that back down, we're really just getting in the market, and we've got a limited exposure. None of us are telling you we can think this thing's going to rally 70, 80 cents. If we really see a weather scare, you pop out of that short call. And, you know, that's where Bill or Pete's going to tell you there's a weather scare. Let's get the hell out of our short call out there like that. But this is something we think you can put on for something you want to move. You can get stuff priced. It can't just go down on you, and it gives you an upside potential like that. So whether you want to move it nearby, farther out, that gives you a way to be long for what we consider a reasonable rally at a reasonable price.
Wayne, talking about calls, and Bill, I was thinking about calls too as Wayne was talking about it, and I was actually kind of looking and thinking about May 220, 230 corn calls. It looks like if you look at those, a little less over 6 cents, less than a dime out of the money, 5 months of time to value. Are these calls the way to go right now if you have to make some sales?
Yeah, if you want to, a lot of farmers have sold a lot of grain, but whether you've done that and you want to replace some, or if you just want to sell some, but you don't want to miss out on any potential rise, I mean, let's face it, folks, we're going to have less acres. We all know that, right? And some of the folks out there are not going to put down as much fertilizer, right? Not very many, but there will be a few. And let's face it, we've got the worst drought. This drought's way worse than 1988. I mean, this drought hung over Denver for 3 years, and it was just 1 year here. If it happens again, I mean, the head agronomist for AgriGold even said, if we have a drought, we're in trouble. Doesn't matter what kind of GMOs we throw in there. Because, you know, if those roots can't get down to moisture, it's going to be in trouble. So we lucked out this year. We go into next year with those three factors, and if that drought kicks in, Dave mentioned that the U.S. is where the stocks are. We got 2.3 billion bushels. Take a look at world stocks. World stocks are the second lowest on record. And if you subtract the U.S. share of that, the rest of the world is at a record-tight world stock situation. So you throw a drought into this thing, you expand ethanol, and all of a sudden you've got a reason for the demand to rush in and grab this market because of drought, this thing could be very exciting. So I don't think our bobbers should be totally down here. We've been talking pretty negative today. Bottom line is this. If you want to sell some things and you want to replace it, you can look at these options. You can put combinations of options together. We've been doing combinations of options in our office. We call them three ways. There's going to be a report out by Friday on our website. You all got a card there. You can get it for free. And it's going to show you how to do a three-way. It's going to explain all the work scenes of it. We've been doing these three ways for a penny and a half cost. And yesterday I did one for a penny credit to the customer. It isn't going to cost you much. And it's going to give you a nice box to gain some revenue on. And it's a great way to maintain ownership in case something happens, but not to put you into a big risk position if it doesn't.
Just this drought isn't just here. It's all over. I live in Bloomington Normal area south of it, but the water supply for Bloomington Normal is 2 foot lower in the lake than it was in 1988 right now. I mean, it's bad through the Midwest.
2006 corn hedge recommendations bill will stay with you with all you know, and our call's the way to go here too. Perhaps, I don't know, buy a December $2.50 call, sell a December $3 call, give about a dime with commissions thereabouts.
Well, you know, Wayne said you want to buy options when you really don't want to buy them. And that's the perfect, it's a really good saying. I think I'm going to use that a few times. And the bottom line is, this December corn is hit. We were buying some 240 calls this week. We picked some up for 18 3/4. We're not going to go out and buy a whole crop's worth or anything like that. But what we want to do is we want to start building a position or get into a place where we can have forward thought. Build a position so that we can go sell against that and not worry about it. Let's just say we buy some 240 calls and the market goes to 260. Okay, up around 260, that's going to be most people's break-even this year, board price coming up. So next year your break-even's around 260. We could sell it at 260, and if we have some calls on and the market takes off on drought and goes to $3, we don't really care. Those calls will completely offset those sales, and our grain is free and clear to be sold at a higher price. Bottom line, I don't have a whole lot of stress. I hope the market goes up, you know. But let's just say it doesn't, just like this year. Let's just say it happens to be like this year and the market goes down. I've got my sales on, and I'm just thankful. Okay, that's good business management. That goes back to trying to figure out a way to lock in a dollar per acre thing and put it into a two-step process. Let's get the flat price on and then merchandise it.
Wayne, your general 2006 hedging recommendations.
We, as I said before, we've already sold between 20 and 40% corn and beans. We've done a combination depending on the individual and their fortitude as to how they want to play the market, whether with options or with futures. Some are all futures, some are a combination of and some are all options. But we've done quite a bit of pricing out there already just for the simple fact that we feel that there's going to be a down move. That doesn't mean necessarily if we see a weather change that we'll stay short. If this drought would come back like last year, we can say goodbye real fast.
I want to talk a little bit about outside markets, and then we're going to go to your questions. I know you have a few, maybe a lot. We'll see how it goes this evening. And we've been following a little bit the dollar, the U.S. dollar, as well as crude oil. And if you followed them in recent history, you're used to kind of seeing them move in opposite directions. That's sort of what they've been doing. But we haven't been quite as comfortable or familiar with the dollar and gold moving with each other in the same direction. Typically what you see is a strong dollar causing the weak euro, and the weak euro then pushing the gold market lower. But this just has not been the case recently. And the question I have for the panel is there a potential clue to the commodity markets and the whole of this outside market behavior bill?
Yeah, very well could. You know, we have the index funds that came in last February into the commodities, and that threw the soybeans into a huge rally. We have seen index funds come in and continue to buy. Index fund money is coming in by the billions. Every single week that there's a paycheck cut, somebody's getting a certain amount of that money pulled out for retirement. And I can guarantee you that every single week there's money coming out of those retirement funds, and some of it's getting allocated to a commodity fund. Some of these commodity funds, by their bylaws, in their bylaws, can only buy the market. I know that sounds absurd to you and me. Obviously, they haven't traded commodities very long. But that's the way they work, because they have to reflect the profit if commodities go up and a loss if commodities go down. That's what they're geared to do. So these commodity indexes are in there buying, and now there's a new product out there in the securities world that's pushing the metals, and that money is coming in after the metals. So it's almost like a supply-demand of money. That's pushing the gold up, and so it could be a prelude to what could happen in other commodities such as grains. As for the dollar, one of the reasons the dollar has rallied is that crude is going down, as you know. The perception in the world is that the U.S. economy will be the fastest economy to respond to those lower crude oil prices from a profitability, from a GDP standpoint. So there's money coming back into the United States driving that dollar up just because crude has gone down. Whereas in Europe, it'll be a slower response to the GDP of those countries.
I'll go to the other end of the table and talk to Pete and say, Pete, the dollar falls, but gold stays firm. Do we see another round of commodity-wide buying as an investment class, sort of a buy low, sell high mentality?
Well, these new fund types that only buy are looking for things that are perceived by them to be cheap. And if gold stays up and corn goes another dime lower, they're going to be in there buying corn, yeah. That's just one of the things they do. When they perceive something to be cheap, they step in and buy it. And right now, people are starting to think that corn is looking cheap. They aren't thinking that about beans yet. They're thinking beans might be cheap at $5. But corn at $2 for March, $1.85 for the old crop we've got now, they could be in helping hold it from going lower.
And Wayne, how does the potential Fed policy play into this? I think they've had 13, or I can't even count how many, 12, 13 straight quarter cent increases in the interest rate. If they inhibit their tightening of the liquidity in the markets, if those rate increases would begin to come to an end, and there have been some beginning signals that may indeed be the case, at least in the short term, what are the implications for commodity markets?
Well, we've seen a lot of slowdown in housing and house sales as far as the interest rates and what's happened over the last 3 months. I believe we've seen specials every night on TV about how I listed my house 30 days too late. That last year, this house now has been on the market 120 days, and just a year ago, it would have only been on the market a week, and it would have been sold at these prices. As interest goes up, it puts money back in CDs, it takes money out of businesses' hands, and it slows growth. So as interest rates go back up, we're going to slow things down again that way. So I think that along the way, it's probably going to be wise with the recovery that this country needs after what the hurricanes did to things, and what look at the amount of money that we have poured down New Orleans. Some of it needed, some of it greatly wasted. And we still have lots and lots of problems. The oil prices, what's going to really happen to them? I think that's a bigger question, because everybody buys groceries, everybody buys something that has to move. Go out on the road, go out anywhere, look how many semis are driving around and what it's costing to get stuff delivered. I know that most of my suppliers on other stuff were telling me 16% increases just because of freight, with nothing else coming into the year. Fortunately, we heard the British Petroleum CEO said that the Thunder Horse platform is going to start producing early in the second half of 2006, and he looks for crude to drop back to $40 a barrel again. Now, is that just a nice speech after the way we heard about the profits from the oil companies and how they basically gouged the dickens out of us and made record profits? You notice how even when crude and unleaded was going up on the board that we dropped 20 cents just before they announced their profits for the quarter. I don't know. You know, probably $40 is where it should be. But the petroleum costs are probably the biggest thing, even more so than interest rates, that are going to affect whether this economy grows or stands still.
Thank you much, Wang. We're going to take your questions here now in just a second. But I remind you about that little white card. By the way, if you tear it in half, there's a piece for you to keep, and it has some of our shows on it. So you have a quick reference to when we're on the air. You can put that in your wallet, put it on your refrigerator, put it next to your radio somewhere. And then, of course, the little white card with your name and email address on it. And that will get you the e-letter and also say yes, that you want more AM 580 agricultural programming on the radio station, especially a noon show, as well as an expanded closing market report. We'll be collecting those cards in just a few minutes. Are there questions in the audience this evening? Or did we do such a grand job that you don't have any? Yes, sir?
You talked about the index funds, and a lot of them are mostly buy-only. Is there a percentage you feel that are buy-only, or is there some that are short in the market as well?
The index funds are all long. The index, what we refer to as the index funds, are the ones that have to be long commodities. They are buying commodities. They are considered cheap. There's a hedge against inflation as commodities going up. The amount of dollars in index funds, though, has decreased over the last 6 months, and I can't say what percentage. I did know, but I can't tell you. But it has went down. But they can only be long if they're considered an index fund.
The other funds can go either way.
Yes.
But so the other type funds push the market too far up when it goes up. They push it too far down when it goes down. The index funds only buy, and then when they have a profit, they sell out, or if they get their beer served on a plate to them, they get out then.
The one thing is, and it's probably to tell you, the index funds consider a profit as they roll ahead. Now, they do have to sell out their position that they have when they roll into the next month. They were doing great in the energy market because they banked and called profits every time they rolled up. And if you remember, energy went from $20, $30, $40, $50, all the way up to $70 in the crude. And every time they rolled ahead and went to a higher price and where they bought in, they considered that they'd made a profit on all those. Now, as they're going from 70 to 60 to 50, they ain't doing so hot. And that's why some of that's getting pulled back. But they were, I think, wasn't it 68% in energies over the last year? Bill, do you know?
I don't know. Their last quarter's been horrible.
They were highly in that. They popped over into the beans, but they were a very small percentage of their dollars investment as compared to what they were every place else. But what's considered an index fund will only be long. There are other funds, as Pete said, and they have more money, and they go both ways.
When in the board do you suppose they're going to divide the reporting between index funds and the commodity funds, the large traders and the speculators? When do you think it's coming?
AM 580 made their desire on this very issue known to the powers that be as late as Kansas City last month at the National Farm National Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City. We talked to some board people in the sternest possible tone while being very gracious about it, that this is something that needs to be done. We're understanding that they're beginning to have some discussions, actually, on moving some of that, is what we're hearing. Are you hearing anything, any rumblings of that? We're hearing that from some of the communication people
politics,
that we work
politics,
with up at the board.
I don't know what will come out of it.
Thank you, Pete.
Next question. I got a question for Bill. If I heard you right, you lifted your 2005 bean hedges, your shorts,
no.
The other day? No?
No, those were spec trades.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the hedges are all still in place, as far as I know.
Those are just speculative accounts?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sir?
we've learned a lot here tonight. But let's say some of the farmers want to have an account with you. What do you charge the farmers for having an account? I'd like to have each one of them answer.
All right. Give us your best sales pitch.
You can sign up for no cost. You're charged when you trade based on, if you trade 1,000 times a day, it's not very much. If you trade once a year, it's a lot higher. But we go from, a penny to a penny and a half a bushel. It's basically what it costs to trade at our firm.
We don't charge a per bushel or per acre. Is that what you were asking?
I'm asking anything in general.
Our firm would be just like Pete talks about. Anything you ask us as far as any other advice goes along with the commissions you pay for trading that way. Everybody has a graduated fee. Of course, if the guy that trades 40 or 50 contracts is probably going to get a better break than the guy that trades one or two. You can generally figure it's going to cost you about a penny a bushel on the high end of things as to trade that way. So that's, and like I say, then of course, if a large producer, of course, can negotiate a better rate like anything else.
We have two divisions in the company. We have a research division. I used to be head of that and have been able to pass that on to some really qualified guys. We sell research only, and if you want to do that, you can subscribe to that tonight for free. And like I said, that's the first time we've done this, so we're pretty excited to see what the response is. And
can a current customer get it for free?
No.
But I can get it for free.
Yeah, but I pretty much guarantee that a high percentage of everybody is going to keep doing it because it's unbelievable. You can get all your daily research. You can get quotes that are building charts right as the market trades. You can get charts going back 20 years specific to any contract month. You can get all of these CFTC reports and everything regularly updated in chart format as well, tabular. Pretty much everything that you can, every report that we follow is right on our website. You don't have to search the net anymore. And so we provide that for $30 a month. If you want consulting, we have a rate for consulting on top of the research. If you want to trade with us, we have a regular trading rate just like these guys do. It's a regular commission. It's roughly penny, penny and a half. Half in and then half out, so it's roughly $35 in, $35 out, that kind of thing. And if you want to do hedging with us, we have a complete hedge program right in our database where we can track your revenues per dollar per acre, and we can generate reports on that. It's pretty neat. And we'd also have in our research department, we developed an in-house program that will analyze and optimize what insurance programs work best for your farm. With your marketing, and we have an LDP program. If you go on our website, you can see that. We're giving that out free as a promo, and that'll optimize what LDP strategy works best with options. So yeah, we have a lot of research to offer as well as brokerage.
Questions? Yes, sir. Pete?
I'd be looking at setting it in the next 2 to 3 weeks because in January, what happens? We have a lot of stuff sells after the 1st of January, and it's one of the stupidest reasons there is. It's because of taxes or something like that. Your marketing shouldn't depend on your taxes. You should have your marketing set up away from your taxes. But when we get to January, we'll see that basis widen out again probably.
To what kind of levels, Pete?
Basis depends on where you're at. I had a farmer today get offered 8 over on his corn. I mean, it depends on where you're at, who needs it. But if I'm setting basis, I'm going to be, how far has it been, where's it at now? I'd be looking at setting it if I want to deliver when you're talking about delivering.
Bill, you got a feel for the northern part of the state. How about here?
Here would be a good time because nobody else is doing it. So I need your opportunity now.
That's what I said when one of the times in one of the questions, so I'm not going to disagree with myself.
No, no comment.
That's why I didn't ask you again.
Hey, you know, I just want to remind him I told him.
Yes, sir.
Right now we're fortunate to have LDPs. How much longer will the government still offer this, and what's your suggestion when they change it? What will we possibly go to?
Wayne, LDPs today, 35 cents or thereabout. I didn't look exactly this morning, but surprising that that they're still there this late in the season. What about the gentleman's question?
Okay, but I think you were talking about policy change in the farm program, aren't you?
Right.
Okay, if you listened to WIL this afternoon, I believe Todd did a special on that. Also about that, talking to some of the legislators. He was talking about the WTO is really down on our LDP program. They're saying we're in violation of the rules the way it is, and they are pushing a lot. Number one, our government's down on how many dollars we gave to the U.S. farmer this year because of the budget restraints and what it cost. You know, because most of you guys collected somewhere from 40 to 48 cents a bushel. And you know, in the places where they had good yields, that's a lot of money, number one. Number two, the WTO is yelling at us. They're talking about going to more direct payments. They're talking about going to more conservation payments and somehow cutting back, maybe going to a position where you'd get paid on your the yield of like the ASC office, or FSA office now. Excuse me, I'm old. I forget that they changed their name. The FSA office has, like, for your yield that they pay your other stuff on that way, you know, rather than that. Or maybe your APH off your insurance or something that way. But they're talking about going to that rather than actual yields and to possibly be decreasing this. It's pretty well known that the LDPs will probably be cut in the next farm bill in some form, but we don't know how much.
Politics are politics. Nobody knows what they'll do, but you have to tell your congressman what you think about yours versus what the oil companies are getting. Nobody even talks about how much they get. They get billions more than you do. Sure, American farmer gets a lot, but we also provide for the country. So you have to tell your congressman everything you think about it, and you ought to tell them, hey, if you're looking at our things that you're giving us, look at what you're giving those oil companies.
We have time for a couple more questions, if there are any more in the audience. Going once. Yes, sir?
Yeah, land prices. Do you folks have a feel on, you know, headed up, headed down, going to stay the same?
In your neck of the woods?
Yeah, Rockford area. Or
Bill?
Well, it's pretty cool. If you really study land regions and what's happening, there's a lot of tax exchanges, and there's a generation dynamic where a lot of the farms have been left to the younger ones. They don't want the farms. They're selling those, taking the money, and buying. You know what the best return states are? Wisconsin, South Dakota, and Minnesota. So they're buying recreational land and using conservation programs and things like that, and the farmland is getting turned back over to a younger farm generation, it seems like, or something else like that. But the point being is that the best returns are your poorer ground. So point being around here, I mean around here, let's look at it. Growing houses is more profitable than anything, right? You know, but you go, you know, out towards you, maybe south of Rockford or something, it's probably going to be relatively stable over the next 12 months. I don't see it going down much. But it might be another 6-7 years before we have another swing like we just saw.
If you're away from development areas, ground will probably go down. I say that out of respect to after you get, if you, what has happened to interest rates? We went from like 2% up to getting 5% now. If you pay too much, you all of a sudden get these guys that could care less with their own ground. They were trading it before because of that, because they couldn't get any money in the CD markets or anything like that. They were all wanting when they turned to cash rent that ground out, most all wanted 5% of whatever they paid for it. coming in, and they were able to get pretty close to that. Now, if they keep to keep moving on up, they can't get 5% anymore, but they can out of a CD, so you're saying, heck with it, I'm going to put it in a CD. So in our area, where it's not development-type ground, we're seeing people say the 1038, they're slowing down on having to exchange for ground compared to putting CDs.
In central Illinois, I'm from just the Bloomington Normal, just south of Bloomington area. We've had record prices this year, amazing. Farmers buying ground for $6,000, $6,300. $4,500 was the low end, and it all wasn't the best farm ground. So I would say we're going to be stable to a little lower unless it's developmental ground in our area, because we had record prices this last year. And we've got a lot of farm ground up for sale right now because people saw that, this third generation or fourth away that don't want it anymore and said, hey, we'll take that, put it in the CD and make more money. So I think in our area we'll be stable to a little lower.
Or just spend it.
Got time for maybe one more question. All right. If I could have the AgriGold folks help me out and help by collecting those little white cards, that would help us out tremendously. I also see that there's a kind of a pad going around. If we could probably get a copy of that at some point in the evening, that would be also useful to us. While the collecting is going on, we'll go ahead with final comments, and we'll start at the far end with Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. Of course, he's in Normal, Illinois. Pete.
Okay, have a plan of some kind. It can be a simple sheet of paper with where I'm going to start selling, either cash or where I'm going to protect it with either on the board with puts or whatever combination of boxes. But have a plan. If it looks unrealistic in the next month, you might have to change it a little. But if it looks realistic, hang in there with it. Today, selling 240 corn that we could have sold 3 months ago, it's not going to happen on our old crop corn. But right now, we can look at what can we do? We're holding old crop corn now that we didn't sell. But what can we do for next year's right now? If it bounces, we're selling it. On old crop, we're looking at selling bounces. The drought that Bill brought up, not many people have talked about that today. The other thing that we haven't talked about much is in South America right now, we're talking about their great and bountiful yields, but they have rust prevalent in a lot of areas already in these early stages. The other thing that could hurt their yields, the other thing here is we had all the worry about rust here last year and it didn't happen. So it's maybe kind of in the back of everybody's minds. If that would dig its ugly head up next summer sometime by bringing that stuff into us, we could see besides the corn a drought hurting, that stuff could make beans bounce temporarily. If they do, take advantage of it and sell it, cash or buy puts.
Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities, New Market, Indiana. And Wayne, you actually have a gentleman out in the audience by the name of Roy Plody you might want to point out.
Well, thank you, Dave. I was going to do that, and I'm glad that you already did. Roy runs our branch office in Sandwich, Illinois, and a lot of you guys know him. He's on the board of the Farm Bureau building here. Just seen him around. The biggest thing I was going to tell you is if you could tell by the way we all sort of waffled on everything we said tonight, there's not a lot of news. There's a lot of speculation as to what can happen or will happen in the future right now. Not a lot's definite. The bird flu looks to be getting better, but we don't know. We got to see if we can stop the outbreaks. There's a lot of things that way. It looks like crude oil could go down to $40, but we're still closer to 60 than we are to 40. We've got a lot of things that could happen. I think it's very important that you look ahead, cover some of your crops here, and look at what we talked about as far as basis levels, possibly doing some pricing ahead. But I think the best thing you can do is stay tuned to AM 580. Listen for some of the developments when we do get some more stuff that's going to move this market. Because right now, I didn't hear anybody tell you in the next week anything was going to move over 5 to 7 cents, did we? No, we didn't. You know, so we're looking for a major market mover to help you guys. Stay tuned. Talk to Roy here locally. Call one of these guys. But listen to the radio and see when it's going to happen. And come back to the meetings when we have them, and hopefully we'll have some better news the next time we come up here. And I want to thank you all for coming out on an evening like tonight and giving us the opportunity to talk and meet with you.
Thank you, Wayne. And Bill Biederman of Allendale, and of course, at the top of the show, I did not mention Bill, of course, in Allendale, a frequent guest on Commodity Week, our Saturday show, and beginning to develop a longer-term kind of relationship with AM 580. And Bill, a closing comment from you, sir.
Thanks, Dave. Well, I should introduce Scott Laudick. He's in the audience, too. He's a broker at our headquarters office in McHenry. And I guess in looking at this whole year, you know, a lot of folks in this room really worried at one point in time whether we were going to have much of a crop. And then once the combine got going, we, you know, let's face it, it could have been a lot worse. So really, reality is we were pretty blessed with what we got. So thinking about that, I'm saying we all, number one, ought to take a big step back and just be thankful for that. And then number two, while we're taking that step back, I think we really need to be wise in what we do with that in the next 6 to 12 months. There's going to be a lot of challenges ahead if this weather stays wild. So, and yet, at the same time, we got low prices, and it's affecting your balance sheet. So I think what you need to do is sit down and really look at your balance sheet and how you can manage your business from and your family from a standpoint of wisdom. You know, how can you keep that net worth from dropping, and how can you manage that? And we've mentioned about different boxes and option spreads and different tools that may be foreign to you. Well, call us up. Ask us. We'll explain it to you. And get wise counsel on how to manage it. And then get yourself into a position to where if things happen next year and get crazy with the drought, you've got some protections built in. Obviously, insurance is a good idea. Maybe some of these option spreads that are relatively cheap, that's a good idea. But I think the main thing is here, we need to step back and be thankful for what we got, and then be wise in what we do with it in the upcoming months. And we hope to see you at our conference.
Thank you, Bill. And let's have a little bit of appreciation for our analysts this evening. They will be more than happy to stay after the show and answer your individual questions if you have any, and chat with you as long as you would like to talk to them. And AgriGold, thank you again for sponsoring this event tonight. We do terribly much appreciate all you've done in terms of sponsoring AM 580 throughout the marketing season and continue to do in the January. Be sure to go to our website at UIUC.edu/AM/agriculture. I know it's a terrible burden, but you'll tell you about all of our upcoming marketing meetings, and we've been in communication with some people, and we might like to come back here with one of our all-day Ag Outlook meetings at some point in the future, and we hope that that might come to pass too someday. So thank you all, and thanks for coming this evening.
Bill, no flat tires tonight.
No flat tires.
Don't have to worry about it. I'm not wearing.
I know.
Hey, good seeing you.
Here you go.
Did he go like that?
Just hit something really cool.
Or maybe you could. Somebody filled in for you.
Got it.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah.